Welcome to the Aquarimax audio show with Russ and Kelly. We provide information on all kinds of aquarium-related topics.
This is episode 254, recorded June 16th, 2015.
Greetings, Aquarimaxers.
We come to you live from our new living room.
Yeah, we survived it. The aquarium survived it.
And the street's a little busier, so I don't know if you can hear the cars going by in the background, but we'll... You know, you can give us feedback on the sound and we'll...
Location. We might have to do it from a different room.
Play around with where to record.
Yeah. But anyway, we're here. We made it. And like I said, the fish tank survived. All the fish survived. All
the other critters survived.
And our back survived.
Which is even more amazing.
Yeah. We're still unpacking. Mm-hmm. Probably be doing that for several months, but...
Takes forever.
At least we're here.
It's because normal life doesn't stop when you have to unpack.
Yeah. All right, well, we've got a lot of people to catch up on. Sorry it took
so
long.
We do, but that's okay. We'll have a nice, lovely podcast.
What have we got this week?
We have Jeremiah in Grand Rapids, Michigan, and Tony in New York, Paul in Central California. We have Matt in Perth, Western Australia, and Mick in Carnforth, UK. Joe in Hudsonville, Michigan. Linda in Southern California. And then we have another email from Matt in Perth. So we've got two from Matt this week. So, okay, shall we dive in?
Yes, let's.
Let's start with Jeremiah in Grand Rapids, Michigan. He says, "Hello again. While listening to this week's episode, I noticed you questioned how to refer to a Michigan resident. The two most common terms are... Michiganian or Michigander, which I kind of like that because it sounds like a goose.
You don't really like geese and Michigander? That much, still, do you?
Well, I don't have anything against. I don't want them as a pet.
I like it, but too. I think that's my favorite
one. I think it's fun. He says, according to Wiki, 58% of us, including myself, prefer Michigander.
So if we were Michiganders, I guess we would prefer it, too.
I guess so. Some consider the term pejorative as it was coined by Abraham Lincoln criticizing Lewis Cass. I don't know who that is, actually.
That's okay.
Sorry. No idea which term Joe prefers. It says, other terms that can be used are youper or troll, depending on peninsula. Youpers are residents of the UP, Upper Peninsula, and trolls are residents of the LP because we live south of or below the Mackinac... He's got pronounced Mackinac? Mm-hmm. Mackinac?
I'm going to go with Mackinac.
Mackinac, not Mackinac. Okay, so Mackinac Bridge, which joins the peninsulas. I think the term troll is technically derogatory, but I've never heard it used in that fashion. The one thing I know is youpers are generally Packer fans, and trolls are generally Lions fans, at least if they care about football. I stick to baseball. Go Tigers.
Well, thank you for the clarification, Jeremiah.
I think it's kind of fun they call you trolls, because it's, you know, like troll from Troll Under the Bridge.
Yeah, exactly. That's kind of fun.
Mm-hmm. So. Okay, that's your Michigan... nickname trivia for the day. So if you get any fish from Michigan, you can say, "This is my Michigander goldfish."
If it's a gold.
If it's a gold. Well, you know, I'm just creating an example.
Yeah.
Obviously, you wouldn't say that if it were a plaity.
Or a half-beak. Well, you might have.
Half-beak. That's what sounds derogatory. Half-beak. Okay. Tony in New York. He says, "Russ, Kelly, and family, congratulations on the house. All the very best for the move. May it all go easily for you in every way. So very exciting. Swim you well, friends." Thank you so much, Tony.
Yes, thank you indeed.
We are very happy to be here.
And we did actually get through it, so
yeah,
we appreciate it.
Okay, Paul in Central California.
Mm-hmm.
He says, "Dear Russ and Kelly, I downloaded the Aquarimax podcast number 252 early on Thursday morning, and, as is my habit, listen to it a little later while driving to a client's radio station transmitter site. This particular transmitter site is located in the foothills and on the western slope of the Sierra Nevada mountain range, on the eastern edge of California's beautiful San Joaquin Valley. I was driving along a curvy mountain road, enjoying the lovely natural scenery, watching for the golden eagles I sometimes see in this area, and thinking about the day's tasks that were ahead of me. My mind started to drift, and I wasn't particularly paying very close attention to your podcast. Suddenly, I was ripped away from my daydream and back to reality. I became focused like a laser beam on your voices when I heard you again talking about my friend Finn. As soon as I heard it, I knew that Finn the Goldfish would be excited and supportive of Tony New York's comments about the Aquarmax website banner / mascot. I could hardly wait to get home after work, and I was right. Finn loves the ideas. Thanks, Tony. Finn has long believed that many fine physical specimens such as himself often don't get the appreciation or recognition that they deserve. Finn believes it's difficult for a long-bodied goldfish, even a fabulous goldfish like himself, to get out from under the shadow of more exotic fishes like the big cichlids, discus, and even the fancy goldfish breeds. Derogatory names used in our hobby such as feeder fish and common goldfish are an indication of this unfortunate indifference among many fishy people. Anyway, Finn would be very happy for you to use any images, likenesses, or videos of him that you might think appropriate for Aquarimax. Actually, he would be honored, and I'm so proud of him, I can hardly stand it. And then he sent us a link to pictures of Finn so that we could choose from them. And he says, many of these pictures are blurry because Finn is never still. If you look through them, you will find that some are cleared in focus. Please feel free to download, copy, and use any that you like. So, thank you, Paul and Finn.
Yeah, we're glad that works out. We're glad they're just as pleased as we would be to be able to do that.
Yes, and just like people, fish should embrace their own kind of beautiful.
Yeah. We've got two, single tailed, long bodied goldfish right here, and I really enjoy them. One of them has some comet blood, so. Mm-hmm.
Longer
fins
tail.
Are a little bit longer, and the other one, I think it's pretty much a common goldfish, mm-hmm. and we're perfectly happy with them.
Mm-hmm.
I like the, the fancy goldfish varieties, too many of them, but they don't do as well. They're just not quite as hardy.
Yeah. Like, we have their tank set up in the living room now at a little bit of an angle in a corner, so, it's like diagonal up against the corner, so it's facing out into the room, into the middle of the room. And it's getting nice light in from the window, so we'll see if that does anything to his color.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes that turns them a little bit darker.
Yeah, sometimes it makes their colors pop more. We're going to have to also watch algae, because it's not getting a lot of direct sunlight.
I don't like watching algae. It doesn't do tricks.
No.
It's boring.
It is, and we'll have to see how it goes, because there's not getting a lot of direct sunlight, but it does get some more indirect light, and there's a lot of Anubias in there, but it's not exactly mm-hmm. a fast-growing plant, so we'll just watch it. I mean, Bisomnus placo in there. We've got an Amano shrimp and one or two Nerites. So they have been able to take care of the algae just fine so far, but I'm not sure if they're going to be able to keep up now. Mm-hmm. We'll just monitor and see what happens.
Maybe with the extra light, though, you might be able to put different plants in that grow a little faster and soak up the nutrients.
Well, most
of those,
the goldfish
will just eat
it,
huh?
Most of them, yeah.
Well, you could always do duckweed.
And a couple of jellyfish. Oh, they'd eat that before it was even
had a chance
to grow.
I know, but then it wouldn't take over, but maybe it would soak up some stuff. I don't know.
They eat it so fast that
it doesn't
wouldn't even have
a
chance
to grow.
No, they'd go put it all down. Mm. We could cover the whole top with duckweed and be gone in a couple hours, probably. Maybe
we
that's
would
a slight exaggeration.
Salad, though.
But, yeah, they would like it. They'd enjoy it.
Mm-hmm.
Okay,
shall we go to Australia?
Oh, and I sent Paul. I wasn't able to open the link yet. I tried it, but I couldn't get it to open, so I sent him an email so that we can get it working and we'll be able to get that to work.
Okie dokie. Matt in Perth, Western Australia. He says, "G'day, Aquarimax. My marine and freshwater superlights have arrived. This is a big moment for me in my aquatic history, as I have never had high-end lighting. Russ, the lighting does work in the American power grid. However, I cannot find many shops that advertise international shipping. It may be possible with enough research. The cool thing about the power supply for both my marine and freshwater system is the power cord is standard figure 8 power cord." Excuse me. "The same type that most portable CD players use." Oh, so just like a normal plug-it-in kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
That's nice.
This kind right here.
It's on the field recorder right now. Okay.
Yep.
"That means you could order lighting units from Australia and then just order some replacement figure 8 power cables that have the American-style power plugs. The power supplies support 100 to 240 volts and 50 to 60 hertz, so it can run on both our power grids.
That is cool.
Mm-hmm. That's very cool. The great thing about my new lights is they provide fantastic, powerful lighting for my corals. The bad thing about my lights is they provide fantastic, powerful lighting for nuisance algae. This compounded by the fact that I could not use both my marine lighting and my...
Different people say different things.
I don't know. T-U-N-Z-E. 9001 protein skimmer at the same time. Is that because there's not, like, room up at the top of the tank, or why is that?
Probably.
Okay. I then added more coral and my anemone to the aquarium, so I had much more powerful lighting, more nutrient load, and less filtration. Sad to say, I now have an outbreak of algae on the glass, which my snails have yet to eat. I have figured out a way to use both the new lighting and the protein skimmer. This should mean I can now pull out a lot of that new protein in the tank and therefore reduce the nutrient load. A lot of bubbles have started forming on the surface of the sand. I think this is from protein being broken down by the sand's bacteria population. It looks unpleasant. However, hopefully I can get things under control now that I have a protein skimmer on 24/7. I checked the ammonia, nitrates, and nitrites. All read zero. It must just be excess protein causing the bubbles. I am going to do daily minor water changes until such time as I see no more bubbles on the bottom of the aquarium. I have custom-made earplugs that I intend to make use of to allow me to sleep with my protein skimmer on. That's kind of amusing.
Well, it's good to find a solution.
Yeah.
Right?
Tony, the primary benefit of coralline algae is that it uses up nutrients that could be feeding nuisance algae and occupies surfaces that may otherwise be growing nuisance algae. Coralline algae comes in green, white, purple, pink, and red colors. Unfortunately, in my case, the coralline algae is not using up enough to fix the problem, though. I have attached a photograph of my new anemone, Alice. Alice is currently living upside down under a rock. While I applaud her magic trick, I would prefer her to be in an obvious visible location so Marlin and Nemo can start hosting in her. She feels like a jellyfish, and it is beautiful to watch her tentacles moving in the current. I may move her at some point, but right now I want to get the agplosion under control. That's a good term.
Yeah.
She actively retracts her tentacles when she finds something she likes in the water column. Speaking of which, I am currently considering buying a Tuns NanoStream 6040. This is a wave maker for nanotanks. SPS, small polyp stony corals, of course, enjoy wave-like currents. A steady stream of water can be enough to keep them alive, but not enough to have them thrive and grow. I now own two SPS corals. But like everything marine, the NanoStream is expensive, so I will have to make sure it will be worth it before purchasing. I have bought a lot of red plants for my discus tank. Red plants are usually harder to keep alive, as they have stricter lighting and nutrient requirements. However, with my new super light, they are doing well. The difference that good lighting can make to an aquarium is incredible. I am not sure you can tell from the photographs, but in person it is amazing how much better it looks with a brighter, higher quality LED lighting. Luckily, I have a lot of plants to use any nutrients in the freshwater aquarium. This means no nuisance algae. Hooray! That's all for this update. That was a good update. That was nice and long and detailed.
Yeah, we got some good stuff here. It was interesting how he was talking about
these.
These
are pictures?
No, these are different pictures from a different contributor. I'm going to try to get to Matt's pictures so we can look at
you
those
can show
as
me.
Well.
And we'll put them up on the page, of course.
Mm-hmm.
What were you going to say? It's interesting how...
Well, I totally forgot what I was going to say, actually.
Sorry, I interrupted you.
That's okay. You like to do that sometimes. That's okay.
Well, I don't like to.
I forgive you.
Just do it on accident.
I'm just teasing you.
A Facebook meme one time that I laughed because it's totally me. And it just said, I don't mean to interrupt people. I just randomly remember things and get really excited.
Oh, it's not working.
We can't find it. Okay, well, we'll find them and we'll put them up on the page.
I hope we'll find them.
They will come back.
The email's not even showing up. Oh, look at that.
See? They came back.
They're
wagging their fishy tails behind them.
I don't understand how that happened, but it did.
It just, I don't know.
Let's see if this works. Oh, it's working. Look at that.
What were you going to say?
I was going to say he's talking about the wave maker. And I have a ton of experience with that, but I do have a little. We got a Hydor wave maker, which is just a small one that you attach to a power head.
Mm-hmm. Oh, did we have that on Nemo's tank?
We did.
Okay.
And it worked okay in terms of giving wave currents. The thing is, it reduces the flow greatly.
The flow of?
Of whatever power head you attach it to or pump you attach it to. Because a lot of the energy that is, you know, causing that flow rate gets converted to basically spinning a little thing around. So you lose a lot of the flow. But it was cheap. It was a really cheap way to make it work. There's Alice. Check it out.
Oh, look at that.
That's cool.
That's pretty cool that she has a name.
There's some little zoanthids and a mushroom coral on there. And
is
there's
the discus tank?
The discus tank with all the plants. Oh, they do
very
look like
nice.
They're doing well.
Yeah.
Look at that.
Wow.
Those cryptocorns are doing well. Look at that red color.
So what are the red plants called? What kind of plants are those? And why are they red?
There are lots of different kinds of plants that are red. So.
But why are they red? And why does it mean that they need more lighting?
Well, there are different pigments going on with the red ones.
Mm-hmm.
But I think part of the thing is, typically, is that the red, at least in some plants, is used as kind of a shield, like a tan, in a way.
Oh, okay.
So they need more light to be able to... They're used to
they're
living in highlight
the
areas. So they're blocking out some of the light. And so they need to get higher light to be able to grow properly and stay red. Some of them will just turn green if they don't get as much light.
Because they don't. Like, they think, oh, I don't need to block anymore because I'm not getting enough.
Yeah, some of them are like that.
That's
not
interesting. They
like
can adapt to like that.
Yeah, well, you think of like Venus flytraps.
That's true. When they're happy and healthy, they have red on them.
Mm-hmm. And some varieties will turn really red, but only if they're in the sun or, you know, super bright light and things like that. So some of the plants are like that. The aquarium plants, I think, are kind of the same way in that it's kind of a shield, but it can pale out if it doesn't get the right kind of light, stuff like that.
Interesting.
And Matt has another email that we'll come back to, and he talks a little bit more about the red plants. So.
Oh, okay.
We'll come
back to it.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. It's time for that station break thingy when I tell you how you can play an active part in the Aquarimax community. If you want your questions or comments featured on the show, send us an email at info@aquarimax.com or call and leave a message at 801-477-0629. You can also subscribe to the Aquarimax YouTube channel, like our Facebook page, and follow us on Twitter.
And now for a blatant but extremely brief plug.
Our ebook, The Aquarimax Guide to 7 Easy Live Foods, is available on Amazon.com for $2.99. So now we have Mick in the one and only Carnforth, UK, and he says, "Hi guys, just wanted to share my excitement with you on the fact that our local authority has finally banned the use of goldfish for prizes when the traveling fair comes to town. Yippee! Woohoo!" That's good, because dang.
Because not everybody is as lucky as Finn.
It's very true.
Finn was extremely fortunate, and that's great. Mm-hmm. A wonderful thing. And I'm glad Finn is where he is today. But there were lots of other goldfish, I'm sure, that day that fared
were not
much worse.
As lucky.
So nothing against Finn or Paul, because they're doing great, obviously. It's just Finn was very lucky to find Paul.
It's true.
And that's what I'm saying, that there are so many other goldfish that don't get to have cool owners who would be able to take care of things like that. So keeping them out of the fairs is a good idea.
Okay. Mick goes on, "I just hope that at some point in the future we can start getting some of the terrapin species struck off the allowed species for sale for pet shop trade licenses." What kind of species? Because they will get out in England and stay there? Or?
I don't think that's why. I think it's just because a lot of people will get them and not really know how to take care of
them.
Kind of like people bring goldfish home.
Oh, okay.
You know, they don't have the law in Britain, as far as I'm aware, of that turtles and terrapins, you know, in...
Mm-hmm.
And when he says terrapin there, he's referring to semi-aquatic chelonians. Like
that should be
radiated sliders.
Band name. Semi-aquatic chelonians.
So they don't have the law in Britain, as far as I'm aware, that they have to be they have to be 4 inches,
a certain size,
carapace length, which they do in the U.S. and have since like 40 years. Since 40 years ago when they made that law. So you can go into the store and buy wee little turtles.
And people don't know how big they get? Or?
And people are very, you know, they don't know what they need, but they say, "Oh, that's a cute little turtle, I'm going to bring it home." impulse buy kind of thing.
He says, including my own shop, we have a voluntary code at present that most shops ignore, and I constantly get people having trouble with them and most often not knowing which type they have been sold.
Yeah.
Oh, there's somebody at the doorbell.
Oh, we better take care of that.
Unexpected.
Sorry about that doorbell attack. We have now recovered from that, and Kelly had to step out for a moment, though, to go pick up the boys, so I'm going to continue here. Yeah, I think it's a great thing for people to be able to keep the turtles or whatever creature they want as long as they're able to take care of them. But it sounds like in this case, this is a way to prevent people who don't know how to take care of them from keeping them. So that seems like a good idea. Maybe there could be a way that they could not be sold in shops, but you could get them online or something for the people who know what they're doing. I don't know. And he continues, got a few new breeding project tanks up and running at the moment. Got my first batch of Ancestress Fry doing well. I love Ancestress Fry, they're so fun. Fry from my Galaxy Platys and just brought in some Limia Melanogaster last week. All very exciting. You know, the Galaxy Platys have a very interesting look to them with their red tails, and then they've got little, like, Dalmatian spots. They're fun. I hadn't seen them before, but I looked them up when I saw this, and they looked really cool. And the Limia Melanogaster are cool, too. I like their... the males have a very interesting pattern on their tail. It's kind of like, at least to me, my partially colorblind self, they look like they're orangish tails with black bars on them. I like it. Looks cool. And he says, I am going for the more natural tank and plant setup rather than the glass box and spawning mop factory type. We'll post some pictures or videos soon. Yeah, we hope to see him. I really like the natural tank setup. It's a lot of fun. Whether it's fish or, you know, other critters, if it's possible to set it up in a naturalistic manner, it's always a plus, I think. Best fishes, Mick, in a very wet and windy Carnforth. All right, thank you, Mick. And now we're on to Joe in Hudsonville, Michigan. He says, hey, Russ and Kelly, I'm not that big of a Disney movie guy. My nerddom is mainly a Disney parks kind of thing. Ah, well, you'd fit right along with our kids now that we've been to Disneyland. They're all there, becoming that way. One of our sons is obsessed with roller coasters and things like that now, and he's designing them, he's talking about them, he's reading about them. It's kind of fun. Says, you were asking what to call folks from Michigan, Michigander, so you agree with Jeremiah on the term. That's interesting. Both part of the 58%, I guess. On to aquarium business. I have attached pics of my two tanks. One is a Fluval Spec 5-gallon. It will relocate to my wife's desk at work. The other is a 15-gallon that is my 3- and 1-year-old daughter's tank. It resides in their bedroom. That's pretty sweet. I'm sure I would have enjoyed a tank when I was that age. I didn't get my first fish till I was 4. First question is about the Fluval. I am terrible at remembering the names of plants that I buy. Any ideas of the names of the two plants in this tank? Well, when I look at the pictures... Oh, I'm away from those pictures. I need to go back to those pictures. Let's see. I'm pretty sure... I'm pretty sure that in the smaller tanks, it's the in the Fluval tank, that what you've got there is Cryptocorin wenti, or I think that's how most people pronounce it. Cryptocorin or Cryptocorini, some people say wenti, on the right there, looking at the tank. And I wouldn't be surprised if the one on the left is also a Cryptocorin, but I'm not sure the species. And then in the 15-gallon, I'm not sure. I can't quite see that plant well enough to tell you what that one is. But if you get a picture of that plant from closer up, I might be able to tell you. And then he says, second question is about the 15-gallon. Another plant is in the back right. Is giant baby tears. The front two are different varieties of Anubias. What's the back left plant? That's the one I couldn't figure out. Third and final question. I want to move the hang-on back filter in the 15-gallon to the back. It is hanging on the left side of the tank now. Are there advantages to having it in the middle back compared to right or left back? Well, I don't know if there are. That's a good question. I guess it's going to cause the flow in the tank to be kind of the flow of the water on the left is going to parallel the flow on the right, instead of having one side of the tank having a stronger flow and one side having not so strong flow. And I don't know that that's an advantage, really. I've always figured it's an advantage to have a place on one side that has a higher flow and another lower, so the fish have kind of a flow gradient and they can find different flow rates when they feel like it. And also, I've found I like to have it on the side so that the uplift tube can sort of be out of the way visually and not interfere with the lines that you want to create in the middle of the tank. If it's sort of up near the side of the tank, it's not quite as visible. But I haven't thought of any advantages to having it in the middle of the tank. Good question. Okay. Oh, and Joe, I asked him a couple of questions and he about the plants because I wasn't getting the pictures, and he had some postscripts for us. He says, I just bought an eLive modular LED light for the 15-gallon. I added two color-enhancing modules. I think I'm going to get a couple more white. What do you think? And I like the way that the light seems to be put together, that you can just snap in modules all the way along the fixture itself. And I do tend to be one who likes a fair bit of white light. It's nice to have, you know, color enhancement too, but I think the white light gives it a good look, so I'd probably add some too. And Joe also sent a picture of the fixture, which you can check out. He says, there isn't water in the light, that is a reflection from the tank top. And it does kind of look like it's in there, so it's good that he mentioned that. All right, well, like I said, I'm not familiar with the fixture itself, but I like the way that you can just add fixtures to it, or not fixtures to it, but add modules to the fixture. All right, and next we're going to have... Kelly just got back, so she's going to introduce the next contributor, which is a new contributor.
This one right here?
Mm-hmm.
Linda from Southern California.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Says, I will be moving soon from Southern California to Northern California. It is about a 6 to 8 hour trip by car. I'm going to interject here. In my completely biased opinion, you are now moving to the better half of California.
That's where Kelly's from.
Yes, you will like it. It's gorgeous. Okay, to move my aquarium, I thought I would put my fish in the water bucket filled with the aquarium water and put a cover on it. Then I would leave enough water in the aquarium to cover the substrate, or enough to keep it moist to preserve the biological filter. What are your thoughts? I recall that you have discussed this topic in the past. Is there a podcast number you can refer me to? I always look forward to listening to your podcast. Thanks for your help.
Well, thank you, Linda, for listening, for being an aquariumaxer. And I did actually send Linda some links to a couple of podcasts in which we'd covered some moving stuff.
Mm-hmm.
But I think her plan sounds good. With the water bucket, that's what we did with these goldfish here.
Yep.
We basically we put them in a 10-gallon bucket and put the lid on, and didn't fill the water up all the way, of course, like 3/4 full. And we left just enough water in the bottom to keep things moist. The Anubias plants were fine because the glass cover kept the humidity in there really high with the water down at the bottom. And so everything was fine with that. And we did that with our other tanks too, essentially, with most of them. Some of the smaller fish we didn't remove, from the tanks, actually, and move, because in my opinion, if you can do it quickly and you keep just enough water for the fish to be okay if they're a very small fish, that it's less stressful than taking them out and putting them in a bag if it's not a long trip.
So do you have any, tweaks or adjustments for her since it's a 6 to 8 hour drive? I mean, should she put like a air pump or anything in the bucket with the goldfish to make sure they stay?
Well, I don't know what kind of fish she's talking about.
Oh, right, we were.
But we did goldfish. But it will probably be okay if there's enough water volume. If it's like in a tiny bag, it could be a problem. It also depends on whether it's a planted tank or not and various things. But maybe if she hasn't moved already. I know we're kind of behind because this was like back in the beginning of June when she sent this. So she may have moved already, but if not, she could maybe send us her setup and we could talk about some specifics that might help her with her specific move, because that is a good point you bring up. Okay. And then we have
another
message
from... email from Matt?
Yes, we did.
And we just gotta find it.
While I'm pulling up Matt's message, I just wanted to mention something that I've got my Opaiula setups, the fairly new ones that I've been working on.
Mm-hmm.
I've got baby Opaiula.
The ones that work.
Yeah. The two new ones and one of the old ones there at work has babies. They all have babies floating around in them.
Oh, cool.
And lots of females that are about to drop babies. And there's at least one female in my setup at home that's also about to drop babies. So it's kind of fun.
Did you tell them about our... Did we talk about those already?
No, we haven't.
Arrivals? Are we doing that or am I ruining a surprise?
I don't know. Let's not talk about it right now.
Okay. And we'll just have to live in suspense.
Yes. we'll probably have to bring that up at some point. Okay. Yeah, let's go to Matt's message. We found it now.
Okay,
Matt
he
in
says,
Perth, Western Australia.
Yes, same Matt as earlier. He says, I have babies in my marine tank. I do not, however, know what the babies are yet. There is a blob of eggs in egg jelly. I am not sure what laid the eggs. I suspect it was my turbo snails. However, it could be the trochus snails or some other reef inhabitant. Unless my single crab is particularly talented, I doubt it was him. I consider Nemo and Marlin, but the eggs do not look like fish eggs, and they are not attached to a rock like all the images of clownfish eggs are. Speaking of Marlin, her lip has a lump on it. It is not interfering with eating, so I'm not too worried about it, but I am also aware I have no ability to treat her, even if I wanted to, as my corals will not tolerate most fish treatments.
I wonder what kind of eggs those are. I know that some of the marine snails reproduce in quite a different manner than the freshwater ones were. You know, it's very common for many freshwater snails to lay kind of a blob of egg jelly. And so I'm not saying that there are no marine snails that do that, but some of the marine snails produce, like, they broadcast eggs, it's my understanding.
Scatter spray them?
And then they swim around. They're mobile and swim in the water like a planktonic form for a while. But that's not to say that these snails didn't do it. I'm not an expert on marine snail reproduction. So we'll be interested to see what happens, though.
Yeah. So... hypothetically speaking, I mean, it sounds like he's not worried about this lump on her lip, but if you need to quarantine or, you know, take out a fish in a marine tank to quarantine them and treat them with something aside from the rest of the tank, how easy, how difficult is that? I mean, you essentially have to set up another marine tank for the quarantine tank.
Yeah, you would have to do that.
And they take longer to cycle, don't they? I mean...
They can take longer to cycle, yes.
Would that even be ready in time if you needed to...
Oh, that's the thing. Yeah, it would take a while to do, I guess.
Okay.
Especially, you know, you couldn't... I mean, I guess you could do live rock, but you might sort of spoil the live rock with the treatment.
Right.
Depending on what the malady is and which medications you'd need.
Mm-hmm.
So it is a little tricky. And... like he says, you can't do it in the main tank because corals are too sensitive for that.
Right.
So, yeah, that is kind of a trouble.
Hopefully it's nothing
lumps can be a lot of things.
Yeah.
It could be just mechanical damage and it could just subside on its own if it's that. There are certain diseases that manifest themselves as lumps and then they just gradually disappear and there's nothing you need to do. And so, yeah. And then it could be something more serious and something that needs, you know, more aggressive treatment. I don't know.
Okay, he says, so I now have turbo snails and sea urchins in my nano aquarium. My sea urchins are about 15 millimeters across, or about the size of a penny. I have three of them. They have long tentacles that stick out in all directions, and I use them to move around. The tentacles are sticky. This is unfortunate, as they often look like commando urchins using the sand as camouflage as they infiltrate the tank. I caught Sebastian attempting a getaway with one of my urchins, but wrestled it off him. Overall, the new aquarium inhabitants are settling in well. The algeplosion has subsided into an alge trickle. That's good news.
Yeah.
I still need to clean the tank glass regularly. This is a frustrating experience, as my corals do not like becoming dislodged. However, in cleaning the glass, it is easy to do this, or accidentally knock over some live rock, which then collides with the coral. I have seen bits of soft coral floating in the current because of a particularly harsh bump. That makes me sad. Hopefully my eggs will turn into thousands of tiny snails to do the work for me, hopefully without causing any other bad effects due to their numbers.
Yeah, that's a good point. Let's hope it ends up being helpful.
Mm-hmm.
Well, and you know, sometimes a little bit of soft coral floating around can end up being a little soft coral that starts growing.
That's true.
You know, depending on the type of soft coral, but like... mushroom coral, for example, you can cut it up like a pizza, and each piece will grow into a new coral.
Wow. Does it have to be pizza slice shape for it to work, or you just mean you can cut it up?
Well, a mushroom coral or corallomorphs. We used to have them. You probably mm-hmm. remember that. They're kind of pizza-shaped.
But, and I mean, so, do you have to, like, make them in wedges?
Not necessarily.
I'm just wondering.
I'm just saying that that's how it's often done, because...
Because it's easy to cut, because they're round.
I guess so. And it works that way. And I never did it, but I did get them... They just split on their own. Got them doing that. I think I might have had one once that got kind of damaged, like he was talking about, with rock moving around.
Mm-hmm.
And there was one that kind of ripped, and a piece got left on the rock, and a piece over here, and a piece over there. And both pieces grew into healthy, happy little corals. So.
Okay. Well, that's good. Maybe it will... Hopefully it will do that instead of not.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. He says, my three discus in my planted aquarium are looking beaten up. I suspect that is... the larger discus is marking out his territory by harassing the smaller ones. Luckily, they're all eating, so it's not too worrying. Perhaps it is time for more ditherfish. I bought about 10 bright red plants for the aquarium, most of which have lost their color. I am not sure why, though. They have plenty of food, excellent lighting, and regular water changes. Perhaps I need to consult the ecology of the planted aquarium again. I may have a solution to this problem. It seems that the more life I introduce to any of my aquariums, the more management problems show up. Perhaps the solution is to be less ambitious, but where's the fun in that?
I like that.
Yeah. Any suggestions or comments would be appreciated.
Yeah, the challenge is part of the fun, isn't it?
Mm-hmm.
Well, I have read, actually, and I don't know if this applies in this case or not. I'm just kind of tossing it out there. I have read that LED lights can sometimes affect plants in a way that does not damage their growth or hinder their growth in any way, and in fact can really encourage it, but can sometimes reduce the red color.
Is that because of the wavelength of the LEDs or something?
I'm not sure. It could be something like that. You know, some lights give out UVA, UVB, and
mm-hmm.
a lot of the, I guess the LEDs don't do that as much or something. I'm not entirely sure how that all works, but I do remember reading, certainly in the case of terrestrial plants, and I believe also possibly in the case of freshwater aquatic plants, that LEDs will sometimes just have the effect of not encouraging that red bloom to come up. Like in bromeliads in a vivarium, for example. And so I'm wondering if that has something to do with it.
Interesting.
Where, you know, the plant's perfectly happy to grow, but it doesn't have this... It's not triggering the red color.
What kinds of things do trigger the red color?
Well, like we were talking about before, sometimes sunlight
mm-hmm.
can trigger red color in certain plants. And maybe it may be the UV mm-hmm. light that's doing it. I don't know.
So, interesting.
I wonder if any of you aquarium maxers can shed some more light on the subject. That would be interesting to see. If any of you have had experiences with that. I currently don't have, since we retired that other LED light on that tank over there, any plants with... I don't have a lot of LED light that I'm using over aquariums. I have a couple of vivariums with LED light, but I don't have any plants that might be applicable, you know, any red plants and those things. I do have some kind of reddish brown crypts that look fine, but they're under compact fluorescent lighting, so that's mm-hmm. not really helpful. So if anybody has any help that they can provide to Matt on that note, it would be interesting to find out. I think that's all we've got for this week, isn't it?
I think so.
Okay. Well, thank you for joining us. We're glad to be back, and hopefully you are still back with us. I haven't thought we've disappeared. I guess you were warned, though. But anyway, we should be back next week at the normal time.
Yep.
And until next time,
may the fish
be with you.
Thank you for listening to this edition of the Aquarimax Audio Show. For additional episodes, please visit aquarimax.com. To leave comments or questions that could be featured on an upcoming podcast, leave a message at 801-477-0629 or email us at info@aquarimax.com.